So today we have case 79977 COA. That's a Court of Appeals case Goad versus State. This is the time set for the oral argument. We have counsel for both parties here appearing by blue jeans. Catherine Reynolds for the appellant, Mr. Goad, and Kevin Naughton for the respondent, State of Nevada. Judge Jerry Tao is appearing by telephone, as you heard. Judge Bonnie Bulla is in the Supreme Court courtroom in Las Vegas. And I'm in the Supreme Court courtroom in Carson City. This is Michael Gibbons speaking. These are empty courtrooms, except for staff that has to be here to help us. We've been using the COVID-19 protocols since we resumed oral argument last May. So far, it's worked pretty well. That includes masks if there are other people around. So there's nobody within 30 feet of me. Judge Bull is in a little bit smaller courtroom, so staff is closer. So she's continuing with the mask. And we don't know if Judge Tao has a mask on. We'll leave that up to him.
No, I'm in my den right now, all by myself.
Okay. The problem, of course, is if there's ever anybody in the household, you just never know what sort of contact will transmit this disease. So, but fortunately, if you can be in a separate room, I don't see anybody with either counsel, so they don't have masks on either, which we're glad because we can hear your argument better or understand it better when we can see you. This is recorded, too, so we can listen to it as needed in the future. When we set this argument, we indicated in the setting notice that the court was most concerned about the competency issue, and we'd like you to focus on that today. Ms. Reynolds, would you like to save any time for rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, please.
All right, 5 minutes. And you should be able to see that timer in your screen, so you'll know exactly where you are. All right, you may proceed. Oh, wait a second. I'm sorry. Judge Bulla, do you want to make any opening comments?
Well, good afternoon. I do have my mask on, so if for some reason either of you can't understand a question that I'm asking, please let me know and I'll do my best to rephrase it. I have had some practice, so hopefully I'll be able to communicate without too much difficulty. But thank you all so much for being here this afternoon. We sure appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Judge Bull. Judge Tao, would you like to make any other opening comments?
So thank you, everybody, for accommodating us. This is, you know, the world we live in. This is, our third or fourth round of oral arguments through the remote process, and it's gone largely smoothly. We've had a couple glitches, a couple times we lost the attorneys. Today, you know, I can't get on, but at least I can hear you, and I just want to thank everybody for accommodating us, and we're doing the best we can under the circumstances and looking forward to the argument.
All right, and thank you also, counsel, for taking this argument setting on short notice. We normally give longer notice. And also for doing this Thanksgiving week, we appreciate your accommodating the court schedule in that regard. All right, Ms. Reynolds, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Catherine Reynolds, and I represent the appellant, Ralph Edmund Goad. The Due Process Clause of both the United States and the Nevada Constitution provide that a defendant may not be prosecuted if at any point he is incompetent during the prosecution to stand trial. Now, there are three key components of competency. First, that a defendant understands the nature of the charges against him. Second, that the defendant understands the nature and purpose of the proceedings. And third, that the defendant can aid and assist counsel with a reasonable degree of rational understanding. Competence can be fluid. A defendant may be competent one day, may not be competent the next. It can arise at multiple times, at any point during the trial process. Given the fluid nature of competency, the Nevada Supreme Court has mandated that the district court initiate formal competence in proceedings whenever there's substantial evidence that a defendant may not be competent. In other phrasing, the Supreme Court has defined that substantial evidence means reasonable doubt as to competence to proceed. Notably, once reasonable doubt arises as to competence, a formal competence evaluation is mandatory. Doubt about competency cannot be dispelled by conflicting evidence. In this case, on the third day of trial, it was clear to everyone in the courtroom that something was wrong with Mr. Goh. It was addressed by the court formally on the record at the lunch break. At that point, it appeared that the symptoms were primarily physical, but there were some concerning signs about Mr. Goad's mental state. Alarmingly, the court put on the record that the bailiff had noted that several jurors had inquired about Mr. Goad's health. Further questioning of defense counsel revealed that they had been concerned since that morning, and they'd asked for private time in the courtroom with Mr. Goad. They stated that during that time, Mr. Goad had indicated that there was nothing. At that point, the attorneys chose to pursue it. During that discussion between the attorneys and the bench, Mr. Goad very randomly asked, "Why? What? Did you say something?" It's telling that even the state was concerned about Mr. Goad's state. They said, when asked by the district court, that this morning when Mr. Goad came into the courtroom, he did not sit down, but stood there with a look that I think was objectively concerning the state. Now, during these proceedings, the court learned from the bailiff and other staff at the sheriff's office that Mr. Goad had not been given a dose of his prescribed medication that morning, and that he needed to be returned to jail. It's not clear from the record what the medication was, what it was for, what his diagnosis was, or any other information, other than it was critical that jail staff insisted that Mr. Goad needed to be returned to the jail and that the medication could not be administered there at the court. Given all of this and Mr. Goad's concerning physical state, the district court found that there was no evidence of gamesmanship and ordered that trial would adjourn early for the day so that Mr. Goad could be transported back to the jail. The next morning, defense counsel formally brought the issue of competence to the court's attention. Defense counsel noted that Mr. Goad wouldn't acknowledge him or his co-counsel, wouldn't look at them, wouldn't make eye contact, wouldn't respond to direct questions. What's concerning here is the district court's immediate knee-jerk response. The court's first statement was that, "I'm not going to conduct some form of mini mental examination from the bench. This trial is going to proceed with or without Mr. Goad's presence or participation." The court then went on to state that he was going to acknowledge Mr. Goad, express his gratitude that he was here, but he wasn't planning to make any findings about his cognitive nature. Now, right here, this is a departure from what case law requires. When competence is called into question, the district court needs to determine whether or not reasonable doubt exists regarding a defendant's competence. Now, what the district court did do was have a very short canvas with Mr. Goad. He established that Mr. Goad was unable to speak, and that was because it appeared that Mr. Goad acknowledged the district court, made eye contact. The district court asked, "Are you unable to speak?" And Mr. Goad nodded his head. It's not clear why he was unable to speak. Mr. Goad felt he couldn't speak. He asked if Mr. Goad wanted to proceed with trial. He confirmed that he did. Mr. Goad did nod vigorously. He wanted to continue with trial. He confirmed that Mr. Goad could write and instructed that he be provided with paper and that he should let his counsel know if he wanted to communicate with them, and that his counsel could stand, let the court know, and that the court would take a recess outside the jury's presence so he could move, write a note to the counsel. The court then stated that was enough of a canvas for him and moved forward with trial. Now, taking this decision to move forward with trial is a finding that there was no reasonable doubt as to Mr. Goad's competence. This was an abuse of discretion. Counsel had brought Mr. Goad's competence to the district court's attention on the very basis that he would not engage in any meaningful interaction with counsel. The district court's canvas didn't touch on that at all. Frankly, Mr. Goad's inability to speak, despite him being cleared from the infirmary, raises reasonable doubt about his mental state right there. The canvas of Mr. Goad
was... So you're talking, okay, so the district court's canvas may not have touched on the, Mr. Goad's communications with his attorney, but why can't we infer from the record that if the attorney isn't complaining that he's having trouble communicating with his client, that maybe that problem doesn't exist?
I think the attorney's very purpose in bringing the issue to the district court's attention was his concern that Mr. Goad would not interact with either him or co-counsel. On the record, the district court stated that he acknowledged his attorneys, he waved at them, but there was no finding made as to whether or not he would continue to acknowledge or communicate with them. The record certainly doesn't show that Mr. Goad utilized the procedure by the district court to have a recess outside of the presence of the jury so that he could communicate with his counsel in writing. The record does show that at the first recess, the district court had observed nominal interactions between Mr. Goad and his counsel, and that he was drinking water. At the very end of the day, so at the close of trial on that third day, defense counsel told the court that he had noticed the court they were discussing Mr. Goad's state again, and he stated that he'd noticed a marked improvement in Mr. Goad. His quote was that it's as if the medication he was given yesterday has a time frame in which it actually has its effect. Counsel stated that he believed that as of that morning, the medication hadn't activated, but by the afternoon, he was confident that it had.
So, Ms. Reynolds, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just have a question. Don't we really need to have medical testimony to determine, number one, what the medication was and what effect, if any, not receiving the medication would have had on Mr. Goad, and how long, once he started receiving it again, he would return to baseline? And we don't have that information, nor was any inquiry made to assist in determining those issues, a resolution of those issues. Is that right?
That's correct. We don't have that information. That information would have been extremely helpful in determining whether this medication would have been affected to have an impact on Mr. Goad's mental state, what that might be, and how long it may have taken him to return to baseline. What we're left with here is a record in which there's a very real doubt as to Mr. Goad's competence on that morning of trial, on the fourth morning of trial, that he may have been. It's simply not clear if he was competent to proceed. He certainly, at the beginning of the morning, was not interacting with his counsel at all, which is a prong that's required to be competent to proceed. And I'd submit that makes this error structural in nature. As you know, a constitutional trial error, which can be subject to harmless error analysis, that occurs during the presentation of the case to the jury. Those errors can be quantitatively assessed, and especially in the context of other evidence presented, so you can weigh the effect that the error had on the case itself. A structural error affects the framework of the trial itself, and by its very nature, structural error cannot be harmless. Here we have a very bright line due process rule that a defendant must be competent at all stages of the proceeding. That did not happen in this case.
Ms. Reynolds, before you conclude, Judge Bolla asked you a question about finding out about the information on the drug use and the effect and the timing of reinstating the drug use and what effect that might have. And we don't have the answer to those questions in the record. It was your response, and of course, we haven't seen it in the record either. So is it possible in this situation to send this case back for a competency hearing at this point in time as opposed to a new trial?
Your Honor, I don't believe a competency examination at this point in time could establish whether Mr. Goad was competent during that morning of trial, though it may provide more information if we knew what the medication was.
Right. Couldn't a hearing determine the answer to the questions that Judge Bullitt posed?
A hearing could determine the answer to those questions, though it would be difficult to determine Mr. Goad's mental state on that morning.
It'd be difficult, but would it be impossible?
I think it would be next to impossible.
Are the witnesses available, the public defenders who represented him, the district attorney who prosecuted, the jail staff who made this intervention about the medication and said he had to come back, the records in the jail from what medication he was taking, could a psychiatrist interview him now? Are any of these things impossible?
As to the attorneys, I know they are all still employed with the Public Defender's Office and District Attorney's Office. I do not know with respect to the jail staff. And certainly, if this court were inclined to remand for some type of hearing, expert testimony would be helpful.
Okay, thank you very much. You still have 3 minutes for a rebuttal.
Thank you.
All right, we'll go to the respondent's side of the case. Mr. Naughton from the District Attorney's Office.
Good afternoon. My name is Kevin Naughton. May it please the court. I'm a Deputy District Attorney with the Washoe County District Attorney's Office, and we represent the state of Nevada in this appeal. The primary issue that is raised in this appeal warrants affirmation of Mr. Goad's conviction. The substantial evidence available in the record shows that Mr. Goad was competent throughout these proceedings and that the issue was one of communication rather than of competency. On the morning of the fourth day of the jury trial, Mr. Goad's attorney, Jay Slocum, advised the court that there was a issue with Mr. Goad apparently refusing to acknowledge either himself or his co-counsel, Ms. Mayhew, and that he believed that it was Mr. Goad's desire to go forward with the trial. At no point in time did Mr. Slocum, Ms. Mayhew, or anybody else suggest to the court that they believed that Mr. Goad was incompetent and that formal competency proceedings were necessary.
Well, Mr. Naughton, what happened the day before? Wasn't there an issue raised that afternoon?
There was,
Your Honor. On the fourth day. So what about the third day? What about the afternoon of the third day?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Was that not point, an issue? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I apologize.
No, you're fine.
The issue on the third day of trial was resolved at that time by transporting Mr. Goad back to the jail so that he could receive that medication that the jail staff had informed the deputies was necessary.
Mr. Naughton, how do we know it resolved the issue? We don't even know what the medication was.
Correct. The following morning, however, Mr. Goad appeared before the court. He was able to respond to the court's inquiries with his verbal gestures, with his physical gestures, raising his hand to indicate understanding and his desire to proceed with the trial. And the additional records that were made by the district court throughout that fourth day of trial indicated that Mr. Goad was, in fact, understanding the proceedings and was able to interact with his attorneys as the trial proceeded.
But Mr. Goad typically responded verbally. So this was a change in how he responded via nonverbal communication on that fourth day. Isn't that a concern?
It's absolutely a concern, Your Honor. However, the competency factor that is provided in NRS 178.400 subsection 2 and in the case law indicates that in order to be competent, a defendant must have the present ability to aid and assist counsel with a reasonable degree of rational understanding. And on the record that was made by the district court in this case, Mr. Goad was able to interact with both the court and apparently with his counsel in some degree on that fourth day of trial. He was able to write, as he indicated, and he was therefore able to communicate with his attorney as the days proceeded.
Mr. Naughton, don't you think there's a distinction between being able to and being willing to? And was there a concern that his willingness to speak with his counsel may have indicated a more significant problem that was going on with him?
Yes, Your Honor, there's certainly a difference between willingness and capability, and that was recognized by the Nevada Supreme Court in the Lipsitz decision. In that case, the trial court indicated that Mr. Lipsitz appeared to be obstinate rather than incompetent. And similarly here, Mr. Goad was apparently able and willing to respond to Washoe County Sheriff's Office deputies prior to coming into the courtroom that morning, although he was refusing to acknowledge or unable to acknowledge his counsel. That suggests that Mr. Goad was making some sort of decision as to whether he would recognize or acknowledge his counsel. And that issue also resolved itself prior to Mr. Slocum concluding his comments that morning, when Mr. Goad began nodding his head and raising his hand to indicate his agreement with Mr. Slocum's statement that he wished to proceed with the trial on that morning.
But then over the lunch hour, apparently there was a very significant change in his demeanor and his willingness to communicate with counsel. Do we have an explanation for that? Did he suddenly become more willing to talk to counsel, or was there a change perhaps in his physical or mental condition because of the medication that was given? We don't know the answer to this, do we?
We don't know that issue. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, go ahead.
we don't know the answer to that question. We have the record that was provided by Mr. Slocum in the form of his observation that Mr. Goad appeared to become more engaged with counsel as the day wore on. We also have the district court's observations at various points throughout the trial on that fourth day that Mr. Goad was, in fact, interacting with counsel even before the morning recess that morning, that he was interacting in the proceedings in some fashion. And so the record does indicate that Mr. Goad was capable and able to interact with his counsel throughout the proceedings that day. That interaction may have taken place via different forms of communication, but the record does support that he was capable and able to interact with his counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Nunn.
Additionally, the district court, prior to Mr. Slocum finishing his recitation of the issue that morning, Mr. Goad had already resolved the issue of refusing to recognize or acknowledge his counsel. He was nodding his head and raising his hand in response to the things that Mr. Slocum had advised the district court of regarding his desire to go forward. The district court also undertook to make reasonable accommodations for Mr. Goad, despite his inability or unwillingness to speak verbally. The district court ensured that Mr. Goad had access to paper and writing implements so that he could communicate with his attorneys in writing throughout the proceedings that day. And it also told Mr. Goad that a recess would be taken so that he could communicate with his attorneys if necessary. It's worth pointing out that it's not at all uncommon in a jury trial that a criminal defendant will communicate with their attorney in writing rather than verbally. And that's for several important reasons. Counsel is likely focused on the examination proceeding in front of them, so they can lodge reasonable objections as necessary, so they can formulate their cross-examination and prepare for closing argument. Additionally, Mr. Goad, in this case, had two attorneys. And so even if one attorney was focused on the examination, Mr. Goad could engage in a written communication with his other attorney to ensure that he was able to participate and aid his defense in the proceedings that day. The record also indicates that Mr. Goad did in fact have an understanding of the proceedings. At the end of trial that day, Mr. Slocum told the court that Mr. Goad had had discussions with him about the evidence that had been presented, about the decision that he had to make regarding whether he would testify on his own behalf, and that Mr. Slocum, as a result, did not have any concerns about his ability to understand that decision. The information regarding his decision to testify was presented to him in the form of a canvas prior to the lunch recess, during which Mr. Goad continued to be nonverbal. He continued to engage with the district court in the form of these physical gestures by nodding his head or raising his hand. And this indicates that Mr. Goad did in fact have that rational degree of understanding and ability to communicate with counsel regarding the information that was being presented to him, both by the court and by the witnesses that morning. The process used by the district court in this case is similar to that used by the district court in the Lipsitz decision. In Lipsitz, there was a much more substantial concern raised regarding the defendant's competency at that point prior to trial, when the state informed the district court that Mr. Lipsitz had apparently been referred to competency court in a different department within that jurisdiction. Upon learning that information, the district court inquired of Mr. Lipsitz's counsel as to whether they had any concerns about his competency. They assured the court that they did not. And the court also undertook a canvass of Mr. Lipsitz to ensure that he was competent and wished to proceed with the trial, which he was able to assure the court that he was. The Nevada Supreme Court approved of this method of dispelling concerns regarding competency utilized by the district court, and it affirmed the district court's decision not to suspend proceedings in that case and proceed to a formal competency hearing. For similar reasons, a similar result should be arrived at here. The issue
Mr. Naughton, what do you do with the argument that was made that the court didn't make any findings, and there's a three-part test here, and that the person has to understand the nature of the charges, the purpose of the proceedings, and can assist counsel with a rational understanding? So that's not a couple questions. That's a series of questions to be able to address all three parts of that test, and then to make findings on that. And that didn't happen here. We just sort of had a little hodgepodge of a couple questions with no foundation laid. I mean, how do we know counsel even had enough interaction to come to an opinion about his competency? They said they had him in court that morning. They didn't investigate the drugs. They didn't get a clue, an explanation about what happened the day before. There was nothing put on the record to alleviate the concerns about the court having to be canceled that early in the afternoon on the third day. There should have been a lot of inquiry into this to find out the underlying circumstances, and the key part of it is the medication. I haven't heard any explanation on the medication. What do you do when somebody's acting very bizarrely and you know they didn't take their medication? And in this case, the police interview after he was arrested, he went through his mental health history, which was a lot of things: hospitalizations, drugs, psychoactive medications of various sorts. No one could clearly identify what his condition was, according to him. So, I mean, there were a whole series of questions here, and the canvas was extremely brief, to put it even generously. I mean, there wasn't hardly anything there. He said he wanted to go forward. Well, you can go forward and still not know what the heck's going on.
Yes, Your Honor, and I would point out that the record made by Mr. Slocum at the beginning of that morning did not indicate that it believed that that he believed that Mr. Goad was incompetent. He advised the court that Mr. Goad was apparently unable or unwilling to acknowledge either himself or counsel. In response to the court's questions and inquiry as to whether he understood the proceedings, understood who the various participants in the proceedings were, Mr. Goad, via his physical gestures, indicated that he did in fact understand that. And so there is a lack of substantial.
Right. He understood who the judge was, but still that doesn't answer the question if he understands the nature of the charges and the purpose of the proceedings, just that there were proceedings and he wanted to go forward. The obvious question is, do you understand what you're charged with and that the jury's going to determine if you're guilty of murder? I mean, it's not very difficult to ask these questions.
Certainly, Your Honor, and a more thorough canvas would have been helpful in this scenario. However, the evidence that was presented to the district court that morning did not suggest that Mr. Goad was incompetent. There was no substantial evidence presented that Mr. Goad lacked those fundamental understandings of the proceedings. And when asked during that very brief canvas by the district court in this case, Mr. Goad did indicate that he was aware of the proceedings and wanted them to go forward. Competency is presumed until there is substantial evidence creating a reasonable doubt that the defendant is in fact incompetent. And in this scenario, there was evidence that Mr. Goad had a difficulty in communicating verbally, but there was not substantial evidence that he lacked an ability to understand either the charges or those proceedings.
Well, what do you do with this medication that apparently was mandatory and he didn't have it, and the proceedings had to be immediately stopped and have him sent back to the jail? I mean, that's an objective fact. How do you handle that? And then the next day where he's still not acting normally, but he apparently gets better as the day goes along. Doesn't that further support the idea that the medication was extremely important, and you can't overlook that or dismiss it?
The record definitely shows that the medication was important. It also shows that Mr. Goad was transported to the jail on that date, on the third day of trial, to receive that medication. And when he appeared again on the fourth day of trial, both Mr. Goad and the Washoe County Sheriff's deputies indicated to the court that Mr. Goad had in fact been medically cleared by the medical staff at the jail so that he could appear and participate in the trial that day.
Who's the medical staff at the jail?
That evidence is not present in this record.
Okay, so I'll ask you the same question I asked Ms. Reynolds. Could there be a competency hearing at this point and answer these questions about the medication, which in my mind is the biggest issue in this, to determine whether there was a reasonable doubt about his competency or not? I mean, we don't have any answer to it. And so there's evidence you can read different ways, but on the medical evidence, we don't have anything other than it was so bad with him not having it, proceedings had to be stopped. So couldn't there be a hearing now to find out what this medication was and what the effect of it was? Maybe it was not important at all. Maybe it was very important. We don't know.
Certainly, I think that information could be adduced at an evidentiary hearing at this point in time. However, based upon the record that we currently have, there is not substantial evidence to suggest that he was incompetent and lacked the present ability in the middle of his trial to proceed.
Well, Mr. Naughton, wouldn't you agree that Mr. Goad needed to be competent throughout the trial, every minute throughout the trial?
Absolutely. That's mandated by the Constitution. That's been affirmed by the Nevada Supreme Court multiple times, and that's required by our statutes. And based upon the record that we have before us in this case, the state submits that the evidence does show that Mr. Goad was competent, he understood the proceedings, he wished to go forward, and that he was capable and willing to engage in communication with his attorneys, albeit in writing instead of verbally.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Naughton, very much. We have 3 minutes for Ms. Reynolds for rebuttal. Oh, we can't hear you, Ms. Reynolds. Are you muted?
I'm so sorry. Two lawyers tell the court that their client won't acknowledge them at all, that he'll speak to sheriff's deputies, he'll come to the courtroom, but that he has made no acknowledgement of their presence. That on its own informs the court that Mr. Goad's competence
Ms. Reynolds, let me ask you a factual question, if I may. Mr. Goad he appears to be 70-something years old. I don't know his exact age now, 74 or 75. He, according to the police, his statement to the police report, he's got a long history of mental illness, and you know, clearly there's something going on with his mental illness. But mental illness and incompetence are two different things. So my question to you is, has he ever in his 74 years been adjudicated incompetent by any other court? Because it doesn't appear during the lifespan of this case before trial that anyone raised any questions of his competency, despite the fact that he clearly has a mental illness. Has anyone ever, other than this one day in time, had any questions about his competency as opposed to his overall mental health?
Judge Tao, as you stated, there is a very long record of mental health issues. Even one of the other underlying issues in this case was that Mr. Goad receives Social Security because he is disabled. In the record before the district court or anything that was currently in the appellant record, there is no other indication that Mr. Goad has been formally adjudicated incompetent by a court. However, the mental illness combined with his behavior that morning absolutely should have been another warning flag that there was something wrong with Mr. Goad. I would note that in Olivares v. State, the district court's decision to proceed was reversed when one of the issues was that Mr. Olivares rejected a plea negotiation, possibly on the ground that he believed that his attorneys were actively working with the state against him. Which goes to the part that just because Mr. Goad could communicate in writing, the ability to actually write words and the ability to rationally assist and interact with your counsel are two separate things. In this case, he did not have the willingness or ability to interact with his counsel. This differentiates it from Lipsitz as well, where the counsel for the defense assured the court that he believed that Mr. Lipsitz was competent to go forward, despite the fact that there had been other competency proceedings initiated. Here you have an attorney who knows that no one wants to send a jury home, but you have an attorney who's raising a very real issue in the view of competence before the district court, stating that his client will not communicate, will not acknowledge him. That requires further competency proceedings and requires a reversal now.
All right. Do you have a concluding sentence, Ms. Reynolds? You don't have to stop mid-sentence.
Mr. Goad would respectfully request that this court reverse his conviction on the basis that his competence was in reasonable doubt during the trial process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And again, thank you, Mr. Naughton. You can see why we set this case for argument. This is a very interesting issue. It's not one that comes up every day, that's for sure. And we'll take this matter under submission and have a written decision in the future. Again, we really appreciate you doing this on short notice and participating by video, and both of you doing a really good job. So thank you again, and we wish you the best for the holidays and particularly Thanksgiving this week. Judge Bullitt, do you have anything else?
Thank you all very much. Thank you for bearing with me wearing my mask. I hope I was understandable. We really do appreciate your participation, and I certainly appreciate the excellent argument today from both of you. Thank you.
Judge Tao?
Yeah, I echo what everybody else said. This is a really, it's a fascinating case with issues that, don't come up very often at all. I want to thank you for your argument. Both of you were really excellent. We have a lot to think about. And again, I apologize for not being able to see you and for you guys not being able to see me, but tech problems are tech problems, but maybe for the next argument, we'll all be able to see each other. But this is, what we have for the time being. And I want to wish, everybody a happy Thanksgiving as well.
All right. Then we'll be in recess.